The Rainy Champs, 3 years running. Don't make eye contact. Uh-oh, here he comes. Now don't mess with this guy. He's a nasty dude.
Well, 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 if it isn't the Fire Ferrets. Pro-bending's saddest excuse for a team. Tell me, how'd a couple of amateurs like you luck your way into the tournament? Especially you, Avatar. You know, if you'd like to learn how a real pro bends, I could give you some private lessons.
You want to go toe-to-toe with me, pretty boy?
Go for it. I'll give you the first shot.
Korra, don't. He's just trying to bait you. If you hit him, we're out of the tournament. Someone Rastana like that. You are one of a kind, Korra.
Welcome once again to the Bitter Jurist podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. As always, I'm your host, Derek Reining, and he's not a co-host. He's a co-host betrayer. It's Sam Stanish.
I'm so happy to be here talking about the episode that introduces Ahsoka Tano to the canon. one of the most incredible cartoon characters ever invented.
Yes, I love Ahsoka Tano. I'm sure someone at some point for sure made that mashup. Like, it's probably just him with her
like the hair? Tail leaf.
Yes, her growth, whatever you would call that.
I'm not sure. I actually just stopped reading a Star Wars novel, so I'm able to speak educatedly about it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you're in a perpetual state of having just stopped reading a Star Wars novel.
Well, it would be easier to not do that if they weren't the most average books ever and put out into the world. But that's their journey, and that's how they are.
Yes, the most passable piece of writing you could ever generate.
Precisely. Derek, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. I'm here to talk about what I would consider traditionally my least favorite episode of the season, at least.
Genuinely, I was watching this and I was like, wow, this is really the episode where they decided to make a bad one. I felt like up until now, they've been doing good episodes, and then this one, they decided to do all of the things I don't like.
Exactly. They were like, what's the big, like, we gotta put in pro-bending. We gotta put in relationship drama. Just everything everyone loathes about Book One of Korra, like, it's all here, folks. And none of the good stuff.
Yeah, and I don't feel like either of the plot lines in this episode have stakes that I care about. And so it's interesting to get a whole episode devoted to things that don't hold any weight.
Yeah, that's my tagline for this episode was going to be the stakes have never been lower. But I mean, I will say though, even though we're instantly ragging on this, like this watch through, I was like, okay, this isn't unwatchably bad. There are definitely parts, that I enjoy, like, Iki and Jinora's little like advice to Korra is really cute. Pema's terrible advice is fantastic.
Iki and Jinora's advice thing is cute, but I do think that it's bizarre that Korra is like going to them for advice when they are all equally acting without any experience whatsoever. Like, and Iki and Jinora are like 4 to 8 years younger than her.
But that, I mean, again, this like when you think about it, it's like, yeah, Korra has never met peers before, so she's like 8-year-olds know about dating, right?
And then my thing with, and we can go chronologically after this, but my thing with the pro-bending plot line is that I don't care if they win or lose. Like, there's no, it's like the only thing that's driving them towards needing to win is that they want to win. It's not like if they win, they get enough prize money to do X. There was like minor drama earlier this season when they needed a bunch of money to enter the tournament, but now it's like they're in the tournament and like, they just kind of want to win, and I'm like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing.
Exactly. It's not like if Cora loses, she's getting kicked out of Republic City. It's not like they are relying on this to like stay in their place. Like, we know everyone involved here is like living pretty well. So yeah, it's tough to really care about the results beyond just like, it'd be nice to see them win, I guess.
Plus, there was no Tenzin, very limited Asami, no Lin. This episode was the low watermark so far. But let's start at the beginning. I think that the first scene here with them training is really cute and good, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and I feel like this episode weirdly has a lot of like really, to me, iconic like frames, mostly because there's lots of cute Balin frames here. The animation in this episode is fantastic, really gorgeous.
I also think that the relationship dynamics that aren't focused on the romantic sides in this episode are really good. Like this team, the three of them bonding in this first scene, and Bolin and Cora when they're like being really friendly. And there's a lot of good Bolin and Mako stuff in this episode too. So I actually do like little pieces of every scene, but then it's just on the whole is about stuff I don't care about.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I agree. The Cora Bolin like date scene is really cute. And yeah, this little intro scene is really fun, and we get that great like shot of like them rotating, looking at each other. Very shades of that one episode of Community when everyone like considers the sexual tension between each other.
Mm. And I also like when they all hit each other at the same time and then they all laugh. It's cute.
It is cute, yeah. And I like their training outfits. Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
I mean, the red does look nice. I would never take that away from them. But then they introduce Asami, and normally I'm like, okay, great, when Asami enters the scene. But in the, like, this is just something that the Avatar writers do. Like, I remember when the first Avatar: The Last Airbender comics came out, and it was the first time we were seeing Aang and Katara be written as like an actual couple, and it was all like, sweetie, honey, blah blah blah, and it's so I hate saying cringeworthy, but it really is. And I that's like sort of the point here, but it's not all like they've just written this flat before, and it like is just like how Aang and Katara would speak to each other in one of the comics, and so like it's so awkward and weird, and this is still a relationship that I have like no interest in whatsoever, and that they're like nosing each other, and it's just like, what are we doing here?
Exactly. It's not appealing. I don't think the writers know how to write a good like active relationship is what I found, because the May Zuko stuff never rings true for me.
I like a lot of what happens with May and Zuko when they're together, actually.
Sure. But to me, it's just like, I don't know, they are good at the like subtexty stuff, I guess. But then it's like when someone's in a relationship, they only know like to make them that annoying couple. There's never like just a nice function. I guess Pema and Tenzin are that, but we haven't really seen much of them lately as a couple, really.
Plus, like in Avatar, The Last Airbender, there's like 40 episodes of character building before any of the characters get into a relationship with one another. Like Sokka and Yue like have a relationship for like, but like it's well, it just feels like there was no time for these, like these are these central characters and you're like trying to like thrust them into these relationships, but we don't have any, like there's nothing that they've built up to make it this way. Like, I just don't care yet that Cora and Mako want to be together, because I haven't seen enough of them like longing after each other or like even interacting in any other way.
Yeah, they just have the one, like we like the that one episode where they're looking for Balin, they have that, but it's like we also just, I don't know, it feels like they decided to like each other in a lot of ways. Like they kind of sometimes will like list off the things they like about the other person, but it just feels like the writers having to like justify it to us, like here's the list of qualities that they enjoy about this person that make them romantically attracted, and then they don't show the actual like romantic tension.
Definitely. And to jump ahead, like they don't really resolve the like that Cora has like placed herself in this position between Mako and Asami in this episode, and so it really just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth, where it's just sort of like, oh, she like tried to break them up, and then like at the end of the episode is like they're just they're like not talking about it, even though they kissed and Asami's there, and it's just sort of like, well, on to the final.
Yeah, it's weird because like I don't know, like it's very the opposite of like A Leaf in the Wind, where like the resolution of the episode in which Cora like does well in probe ending, it's very tied into like the things she's going through in that episode, and it feels like a wrapping up of a storyline. This does not, and it's like almost intentionally so. Like they have weird little conversations. I think it's supposed to like, I assume like the writer's justification for this is like, oh, you know, in real life sometimes people fight and they just like can go back to normal very quickly without having to have some big dramatic thing, but that doesn't make for thrilling television. So I get what they were going for here, where it's just like, yeah, we're cool, like that's kind of the resolution here, but it just doesn't, it's not fun to watch.
And I'm sure that it's in service of a longer arc and this will have payoff later in the season, but it's just weird the way that it was done in this episode for me.
Exactly. And plus, like you said, we barely hear from Asami. She just like pops into frame in that one scene.
She's got costumes and then she comes in at the end to congratulate them.
Yeah, and there's like, yeah, it's very strange that she just is like not involved in any of this whatsoever. But I guess they just want to focus on this trio here. But it's like, I wish we got to focus on this trio in a non-romantic context.
Yeah.
Like we've only seen them kind of in separate little like chunks, and it's usually in like these very high stakes situations, but it would have been nice to like build these three up as a trio before we get into like the weeds of like the romantic tension.
Yeah, like I just feel like, and like this probe ending tournament stuff could have been really good later in the season. Like I just feel like this is it, there's just so much action sequence here for characters that I'm like starting to care about, but I don't really, like I said, care about the probe ending tournament yet. But if it's like I'm so invested in these characters and what they want later down the line, like it doesn't matter if there's like some high stakes on the game, like I want them to succeed because I like them. But now it's just sort of like, guess they're throwing rocks at each other again.
Yeah, I want them to succeed because that's what the show wants me to think is essentially it. It's tough. The probending stuff, even though I do like the animation of it, there's definitely a version of the show where probending is like a really fun, enjoyable thing. And it had like, I still like enjoy little moments of it. Like I think the hat trick with Cora at the end is like really exciting and fun. It's good to see her like really succeed at this thing. But yeah, it's not really in service of anything.
Definitely. And I'm not against sports narratives at all. I think that Friday Night Lights is one of the best shows ever. And so like every episode of Friday Night Lights isn't about football. It's about how the characters are like engaging with each other, and football is like a major part of their lives. And it's not all about like whatever. I don't want to harp, even though we have.
Yeah, let's harp on Mako instead, because I have a big qualm. My biggest issue in this episode is when Mako is like talking to Balin in their apartment, and Mako like says a line like, I don't know, Asami just makes more sense. Like it's like, oh great, good to know that you just like aren't just actually attracted to Asami. It just makes more sense. It's just such a gross, cynical thing to say about another person.
It is, and I don't even get what he like. It's unexplained, like why he even thinks that way. It's like, does she? Because it seems like you have a lot more in common with Cora at this point, and like you've shared extracurricular activities. Your personalities are a lot more in line. You spent more time together. You like, it just seems like currently between the two, Cora makes more sense. And like it did seem like you liked her before you met Asami. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be more interesting if like Mako was genuinely like, I don't know, like if I break up with Asami, will we not be able to like go forward in the tournament? Like if he was like actually like financially beholden to Asami, I guess that would be a little more interesting. But like that's not it. That's not what he says. He just like says it makes sense, whatever that means.
Yeah, and like this is all in reaction to Bolin being like, should I date Cora? And Mako's like not even listening to him, and it's just sort of like, ew, this is not fun to see. At the end of the scene where Asami comes into the training center and Bolin and Cora like have interactions, and Bolin is like trying to flirt with her a little bit and like ask her out, but Cora's like, I gotta go. That scene is really funny and cute, and like I love Bolin there.
Yeah, Bolin is the only one who comes out of this looking clean. Like as much as I love Cora, she also obviously has big struggles in this episode, namely taking Pema's insane person advice, which I love.
It's very Jim Halpert of her, just like leaning in to someone else's life, unwarranted.
Like, I get the idea of like just being honest with someone. Sure, that makes sense to me. But the idea of like be honest to the point that you're like forcing an ultimatum on someone, and then also like physically like forcing yourself on another person, just like is really terrible. And not even like I don't think Korra even thinks about Asami at any point beyond calling her beautiful and elegant at one point, which I did note.
Yeah, also just like thinking of her as the wrong person for Mako, but it's clearly through a selfish lens of wanting to be with him.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the other thing is that the characters really examine their own feelings, which is like, sure, they're teenagers. Like, of course, that's asking a lot, but it's still like, no one, like we said though, at the end of the episode, no one really learned a lesson about anything. Like, no one thought, oh, I did the wrong thing here or whatever. It was just like, they felt weird and now they're going to try to not feel weird because they want to win sports.
Which could. I just feel like there are good ways to do this plotline.
Exactly.
And they were not taken up on.
No. But visually, I do like the way that they like demonstrate this sort of tension. Like, there's a really fantastic shot like after the kiss that goes down with some amazing Bolin facial animations in that scene, by the way.
Yeah.
But there's like this, when they're in like the locker room sort of area, all three of them are like just positioned like on opposite ends of the room and they're all facing different directions. Like, I think they do a really good job of showing that tension visually in a more engaging way than the actual like writing.
No, yeah, I think that this whole episode is very beautiful. Like, the choice to make it be starting up at wintertime, like, it's clearly been a couple weeks since the last episode. I think that all of like the snow scenes are great, the combat scenes are great, and like all of the food in this episode is really good too. Like, there's like three or four different scenes centered around food. Like, Mako's making noodles in his and Bolin's apartment, and Korra and Bolin go to that waterbending water tribe restaurant, and like Bolin's in another bar at one point, I think. And I think that it's just there are a lot of really good visual elements to the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talked about this off pod, but Tano, a lovingly drawn man, voiced by Rami Malek.
Yeah.
It's interesting this season. I feel like they since we lack like a Fire Lord Ozai in the background and we lack an Admiral Zhao, like I guess Amon is kind of that figure, but they like keep throwing these like mini villains at like sub bosses, I guess is what you would call them, like in front of the heroes, and like Tano is just like here now. He's suddenly our rival. We had seen him more before this.
He's like really. I just feel like there's no other character designed like him in the whole show, and I don't even know specifically what I'm like calling out when I look at him like that, but it really is just like very different from what I've come to expect from like an Avatar character. And like, I feel like you're saying with these like mini bosses, I feel like I've thought of this sort of antagonist in this way since like Harry Potter days, where I was like, yeah, like Voldemort is the main bad guy, but like Snape and Malfoy are there throughout the year to like provide conflict for like the main characters,
right? And yeah, we're getting that suddenly here with Tano, which sure, why not.
I think that he's very I like him as an antagonist. Like, he's very cocky and he has his like posse, and he's trying to get Korra to beat him up so that she gets thrown out of the tournament, which is, you know, really good villain tactic.
Yeah, he's a great, I like this character, which is why I guess I'm saying, like, I wish we had seen him more before this. Like, I love that noodle shop scene where he, like, where Naga shows up and scares the shit out of him. It's, like, just really great, great little moments in this episode, despite, like we said, the sort of greater whole of it not really adding up to anything satisfying.
Certainly. So, like, we get this, like, Korra, like, knocks away Bolin's advances. She's like, I gotta go to the air temple. And she talks to Ikki and Jinora, and they tell her about this person a long time ago who, like, rode a dragon into town and burned the village down or something.
Yeah, it's like Jinora's, like, reading a book about this. And then I loved Ikki's advice, which was fantastic, which was brewing a love potion, and they use, like, stars as ice cubes or something. I love these two so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Pema, like, I don't think we've kind of like referenced this before, but I feel like this was like the biggest, like, so far of the season, Tumblr discourse episode.
Absolutely.
Like, there's like so many things throughout the episode that I'm like having flashbacks to, like, oh my god, people were pissed at this. And like, I think obviously Penla's advice is a big contender for that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so many different things for someone to make discourse about if from this episode, from Mako and Bolin, like, warring over Korra, and Korra it's trying to break up Asami and Mako, and then also Pema here. Obviously, the implication is that Tenzin and Lin were once together, and, like, Pema was like, that's wrong, and, like, did the exact same thing. So, yeah, there's so many, like, explosive different discourses and discussions to talk about. And I'm sure that I could come up with another one if I thought about it for another second.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, the probe ending stuff is like pretty discourse proof, because it's they just seem to make up new rules every episode. Like, what's a yellow fan? I didn't know there was a timer involved. Yeah, it was very strange.
The one-on-one tiebreaker is pretty cool, but then There was that part where they like switched sides of the arena, and I was like, When did this become part of it?
Yeah, that's the they took the Paisho like rulelessness and like amped it up to like the forefront. Like, it's just it's boxing without rules, which could be fun, I guess.
I like we've said, like, we've seen other episodes where the pro bending stuff isn't boring and slow.
You're right. I do also really enjoy like seeing the other teams. I like that we get all the all-female one. We get like the old dudes. It kind of felt like a throwback to like Earth Rumble 6, like to a less ridiculous degree. But it's cute seeing like all these different little groups. Do you have a favorite? I'm a big Rabaru stan, I think, which is the all-female one.
I guess I'm basic and the fire ferrets are my favorite. I think it would have been easier to have a favorite if they were closer to the Earth Rumble. If they were just like a little bit more distinct.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. Because like, it's sad to see like old dudes get the shit kicked out of them by literal teenagers. Like, and they look like 40.
Is this the team that Korra like juggles one of the
that's like the one that's supposed to be like they're like polar opposites or whatever. Like, there's a firebender girl, and then like the other two are boys and supposed to like, I guess, mirror the fire ferrets in some way. But yeah, she just like juggles him, which again, we didn't know that was a thing, but okay, I'll take your word for it, show.
And when she's doing it, like, it does really look like it's against the rules, and it's good that they got caught out. But then she waterbends at the ref. I would have thought that would have thrown them out.
Yeah, I think that's the fan, but I don't think we know what the fan means. Like, I don't know.
Unclear.
It is, but I do love the little interstitial like shots of the announcer dude. He's cool. I like him.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's that great Flamio noodles joke that they do when Bowen throws up. Yeah, that's cute. I like that. Those little aspects of pro bending.
Yeah, I think we've been very high on like the radio announcers and the sports commentators in the Legend of Korra universe.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think we've talked about it yet, but obviously, in Korra, Avatar had the previously ons, and they were just like Roku saying previously on, and then we just got flashes. But like Korra, it's like a lot more stylized. It's like in an old timey sort of like radio format, very similar to like Clone Wars, in that, like, yeah, which was kind of like a serial sort of deal. So I like that. It adds some flavor to the previously ons.
It's also very similar to how Glee does it, if you were interested in that.
So that's what you missed on The Legend of Korra.
I would love if Legend of Korra took a page out of Arrested Development's book and made fake next time on Legend of Korra.
I think that of every show, honestly. Like, I think the best joke ever created, like, idea for television. Just make shit up. Why not? It's good.
Very meta.
Shirley voice. So I feel like, is there anything else about this episode that we haven't really nailed down? I feel like the pro bendings, we didn't get any equalist stuff. I think they mentioned chi blockers, but that's about it. We don't get any, like we said, Asami. This episode is low on tension and low on Tenzin, like we said, which is
great wordplay.
Yes, thank you. So yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts before we go into spoiler town?
Yeah, I mean, just finally, like, I think that we hit the nail on the head. Like, I think that if you're gonna do an episode where someone is like trying to break someone else up, like, it's just so crazy to me that we don't get anything from Asami in this episode emotionally. Like, it just doesn't wrap up at all or feel good at all to see these characters come together. And like, the most sympathetic person in this scenario is Asami, and we don't see anything from her other than like seemingly word of God, older, mature person being like, no, you're doing the right thing, like, break them up. And it just seems very off and weird and bad to do this. But I'm probably like, I just feel like Asami is so great, and this is only her second episode, and it's just so bizarre that they're like trying to like throw her under the bus like this.
Yeah, she doesn't like really get to comment on anything that's going on. Like, when she walks in at the end, she doesn't really say anything beyond just like, you guys did great, that was awesome, Korra.
She's literally just their supportive benefactor, and but like every time she's not in the room, people are like talking shit about her.
I know, for no reason. It's so bizarre. But yeah, I guess that wraps us up in the spoiler-free territory. Do you want to tell people where to find you?
Oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow my other podcast at Word on the Straits, STR8S, on Instagram and Twitter.
Perfect. You can find me at Rain Dierks on Twitter. And I just started a Revolutionary Girl Utena podcast on the Bitter Jurors Network, the Shadow Play Gaze, with our friend Christine Palin. You can find us at Shadow Play Gaze on Twitter. And obviously you'll see us in the Bitter Jurors feed. So listen to that and watch Revolutionary Girl Utena along
with us. First episode was great. I can't wait for the second one. I kind of feel like I can't decide if I'm going to watch all the way through Utena and listen to your episodes as they come out, or if I should just watch as you guys are discussing.
That's the thing. Fortunately, it's unlike this, unlike Bitter Jurors, we're not doing like a spoiler section. We're just like doing it as it is. So it's like either way works. I think obviously both of Christine and I have watched the show before multiple times. So like, we know it's coming. So I would like to think that like, we can like throw stuff in there that hopefully like makes some more sense to people with the wider context, but it is like kind of designed in a way to watch along if you want to, or just like binge watch all of Utena. Why not? We won't stop you.
Thank you for letting me choose my own course.
Yes. Choose your own absolute destiny, as they may say on Utena.
I trust you on that one. spoiler wise, like I think that they want to, I guess this isn't really spoiler commentary, but they like really want to have every episode set in the same city but also still be able to do these episodic one-offs. Like, it doesn't make sense that there's nothing about the Equalists in this episode. Like, there it's just like it doesn't track like at all, that there's that it's not impacting the plot line whatsoever after last episode and the episode exactly before.
Yeah, it's like we couldn't get like, I don't know, I feel like we could be getting these like little scenes of like Amon planning stuff, or like get like, I don't know, something to like build up these villains more in the background.
Just like to see some Equalists like sneaking around in the pro-bending arena, or like some sort of like someone talk about like Amon taking over the radio station again or something, like literally anything.
Yeah, but, like,
it's
be
been
like
weeks and there's no commentary at all on what the Equalists have been up to.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't remember if this is like why they hit the pro-bending arena. Is that next episode that this happens, the attack on the arena?
Maybe.
which it's weird because like we keep talking about how like the finals are just not interesting to us, but like knowing what happens at the finals, like, which is I think the best episode of the whole season and one of the best episodes of the show, is when Amon attacks the arena. It's like, but it's only exciting because I know that something incidental happens here that's completely unrelated to the actual like pro-bending. So it's weird that they don't like, I don't know, build up these two worlds like kind of coming together. Like, they never really talk about the idea of like pro-bending being this like symbol of like bending oppression. Like, we could have like protesters outside the arena or something, or people like trying to interrupt the match or something, just to show that like this is kind of like a hotbed for this. So it doesn't like kind of come out of nowhere.
It just, I mean, like I feel like they, we could have done a whole, if we wanted to have done a Legend of Korra podcast where we like break down every episode and talk about how they could have made it better. And like, it's just like, it does, it, I just wish that it was more thought out and that the, like, they wanted to do this, like, all one city thing and have all, like we were talking about with Otto, this Deep Space Nine thing where, like, character, like, they have these long-running plots with these side characters who can, like, do all these things over the course of a season and they don't have to go from town to town. But, like, if you're going to do that, you actually have to do that and, like, think about how the world is building and what people's reactions to, like, what is going on, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like they want it to be kind of like a Batman Beyond sort of situation here. But it's, I mean, I feel like all we ever see is like Air Temple Island and the Probranding Arena. And then like, we get like one new location per episode really. Which is absurd. Oh, and we haven't even talked about Tarlok. Like they mentioned Tarlok in this episode, another villain that they throw in there. Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know. This is like my problem, I think, with this first book. Is because it's just Mike and Brian writing here. Like, they needed a team here to, like, editorialize this a little. I think that's what we can kind of blame it on if we need to blame it on something.
Sure, and I think that's a similar... I believe that the last season or two of Game of Thrones is the same thing, where only the creators were writing episodes. I can't remember if that's true anymore. But it just feels like if you... It just feels like it would be easier to like think about more things going on if there were more people helping. And I'm sure there were like other people involved, but it just seems a little too focused at times and then very unfocused at other times.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like an outline in a lot of ways. Like they are the ideas guy, and then like you would throw that to the writer's room and like they could sort of extrapolate on these ideas and refine them. And that just didn't happen here. Which is upsetting, but I will say there are some really great episodes coming up, I think. So I would, this is just kind of has traditionally been my least favorite episode of this book and one of my least favorite episodes of like the entire franchise. So
when I was watching it, I was like, this is the worst episode they've ever done. Like of the 66 episodes we've now seen, this is 66.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure some book two episodes are for sure going to knock it up a few spots, but it just is, of like you said, a low watermark for them. But also, I don't know. There, like we said, there was fun stuff here. I like Noodle Drunk Bolin. Everything Bolin did absolutely nothing wrong in this entire episode.
Definitely, like they're still very talented writers, and like they can make these great character moments, which is why it's so glaring when bad stuff comes out of their minds.
Exactly. But fortunately, like we said, this episode, like, very little Asami. We don't even get her thoughts on any of this, but they do, I think, start to address that coming up here, which is nice. And I love Korra calling her future girlfriend beautiful and elegant in this episode.
Perfect. Yeah, no, I think that a lot of the Korra Asami, or at least Korra's responses to Asami, makes a lot of sense when you like consider that she's a burgeoning bisexual woman and doesn't understand what she's actually feeling. But that won't be written into the show whatsoever. So it's, you know, it's only for us true heads to grapple with.
Right. I think maybe next episode's when they like do the group hang at the mansion.
That's a great episode.
Right. So yeah, this is, we've made it over this little speed bump. It's not the last one, but we did it. I'm proud of
it. We knew it was coming.
Yes, we did. And what a waste of a really great episode title, I would say. So is that our final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is indicative of, like, how the Legend of Korra romance plots go for a majority of the show. And, like, it's just sort of the first taste, and it's just reminding me of everything to come. But I agree with you that, like, even though, there are better episodes to come, and I'm excited about those ones.
Exactly, yes. mostly... whatever, book three, we'll get there. I'm excited. Sam, replug away.
Oh my gosh. At Sam Sanish, Instagram, Twitter. At Word on the Straits, SCR8S, Instagram and Twitter.
Yes, and you can find me at Rain Derricks on Twitter, just Twitter. You can find us at Bitter Jerks Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and Shadowplay Gaze on Twitter.
Listen to Shadowplay Gaze. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. And even more gay, somehow.
It's definitely queerer, queer text than Legend of Korra.
Absolutely. So far.
For quite some time. This was great. Yeah. And I know we said that we were going to try to be positive in these episodes, but this one is truly impossible to do that for. So I'm sorry to any stands out there.
Any spirit of competition heads out there.
Yeah.
We're so sorry. I would love to meet someone whose favorite episode is this, honestly.
That sounds exhausting.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Bye, y'all.
Bye.